right, everybody, welcome on over to the War Room. I am your host, Tardio. For those of you guys who don't know me, I normally host the Speak the Truth podcast over on YouTube. If you guys need to find me, you guys can go over to X. You can search my name, Matt Tardio, or AngerTab. My whole thing is I promise you some of you guys are going to love me and some of you guys are going to hate me. And that's okay, because what I want you to be throughout this entire program is be a critical thinker. I want you to pay attention to information that I give you, analyze it, and determine for yourself what it is that the actual truth is. Because I think one thing everybody can agree on is that nobody can trust mainstream media anymore. I don't trust a single word that comes out of anybody's mouth, for that matter. There's this word that we had in the military. What was it called? Trust but verify, I think is what we used to say. Trust but verify. And there's going to be tons of examples you're going to see of that coming up throughout today's show. We're going to be going over a lot of different things today. We're going to be talking about, in the first hour, transgender issues. I've got a whistleblower that's coming up that used to work within the medical industry, and she has been covering all of the malpractice that has been taking place. It used to be the medicine was about patient care, but doing what's right for your patients. And then, as it turns out, in her case, it's not so much that. That's not what she witnessed, it's not what she experienced. She's even alleged certain things such as insurance fraud as it goes through it. She's going to be their first guest today of the hour. Then, after that coming up, we're going to be going over the border. Yesterday morning, I spoke and I had told you guys that our border is not secure, despite what the president says. He wants you to believe that it's secure, but is it really? I've got a guest coming on. He provided me videos and he provided me photos of the Mexican military on the U.S. side of the border. You heard that right. The Mexican military on the U.S. side of the border. Brianna Morello reached out to DHS for a statement on that, and they didn't even bother responding to her. Now, what's really troubling about this is that these uniformed members of the Mexican military, they're fully armed. They were in full uniform. And there's about a platoon-sized element of them. So you're talking about 30 to 40 people, soldiers, walking around shaking doors on U.S. soil. It's a bit of a problem. And the man that provided it, well, he is a very reputable human being. He's directly shown Tulsi Gabbard around the border. He's had people like Joe Kent out there, and he's even testified before Congress. A lot of the information that he has is extremely troubling about what's actually continuing to flow into this country. He's been promised that he's going to get additional resources and more things that are going to be done about it, but it just doesn't appear like it's been that way. We're also going to have Rich High. You guys might know him as Angry Cops. He's going to be coming on. We're going to be talking about the shooting that took place with, what's his dang name, Alex Preddy, an ICE agent over the weekend. A lot of people and a lot of misinformation are going around about this. Well, we're going to talk about the legalities behind it. We're not even going to sit here and tell you whether it's right or it's wrong. I might give you my opinion on it because I think it matters. If I have a bias, I'm going to state it. That way you have information that you can actually use to your benefit and you know what to take and what not to take. After that, we're actually going to open up the phones. If you guys disagree with anything that we talk about, or if you have an argument with what we're talking about, feel free to bring it up. Or if you have questions, like I said, I want you to be a critical thinker. Following that, we're going to end up having Nate Vance on the program. Nate is a, well, I wouldn't say a massive name, but he started to become a pretty decent sized name last year. He happens to be the cousin of Vice President J.D. Vance. They were raised like brothers. Nate spent years over inside of Ukraine fighting for the Ukrainian military against the Russians. And before I even reached out to him and talked to him about a year ago, I called over through some of my friends that are over in Ukraine fighting and vetted to make sure that Nate was a stand-up guy. Turns out he is. He's beyond a stand-up guy. Nate is a stellar human being. He's turned into a decent friend of mine. Well, now we have the United States that's sitting outside of Iran, and we're ready to bomb the crap out of them. There's talks of us having an embargo taking place outside of there where we're going to start enforcing sanctions against the IRGC. That's a foreign terror organization designated by the United States and Canada. If we start blockading off their oil and start boarding their ships right outside of Iranian waters, there's a good chance that Iran's going to shoot back at us, and we're going to turn around, we're going to start bombing the crap out of them, and it's going to keep going. Well, what's the issue? Well, Trump, at the beginning of the month, warned Iran and said, if they continue to kill their civilians, we're locked and loaded and ready to go. Here we are weeks later. Reports of upwards of 50,000 Iranians have been killed and the U.S. hasn't done anything. And then Trump came out and made a statement today. And guess what? His statement had absolutely nothing to do about Iran killing its civilians. No. It had to do with uranium. And it's the same warning that we gave them last year before we started bombing them. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. It's going to be an amazing program. I promise you, you're not going to miss it.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
You're tuned in to The War Room with your host, Matt Tardio. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Hi, everybody. Hope you guys can hear me out there. It's going to be a lovely day because my next guest is going to be a whistleblower known as Jamie Reed. Jamie has been blowing the transgender issue wide open. And some of the stuff that she actually talks about is unreal. I'm going to play a clip for you guys of her testifying. And she's done this in nearly over 17 different states here in the United States. And she's had really good effects. And what she's doing is she's talking about the malpractice that's taking place within the transgender medical community. Let's go ahead and roll that clip for him.
Thank you for your testimony. Was there a moment where you used to speak one language, and then you changed how you spoke, and now you're speaking like you speak now? And was it the science? Was it the witness? What part changed? And then is there anything in your testimony that you wanted to say that you weren't able to say as a result of you said there's questions that you could answer?
Thank you, Representative, for the question. Yes, I was once an absolute true believer. I trained judges within the state of Missouri around gender-affirming care. I trained all of the other divisions within the hospital setting around what is referred to as gender-affirming care. I believed wholeheartedly in this protocol. My spouse is trans, who has now walked back her transition. She was trans for 13 years. There were three aspects that made me come to change my mind. Number one, this protocol itself was built on regressive stereotypes and is homophobic. The first 70 children that were put through this protocol, 68 of them were same-sex attracted. The entire DSM protocol is based on stereotypes about what sexed behavior looks like, and most gays and lesbians in childhood do not fit the mold of what regressive stereotypes look like for sexed behavior. Of the 71st children that were put through this protocol, one of them died because the protocol itself destroyed what used to be the way that we would invert an adult's penis to make it a vagina. The puberty blocker itself makes the penis not grow to the point where that child was put through a vaginoplasty that used their colon instead, and they died of a massive infection. The protocol itself is homophobic. Number two, I saw a patient population go from four new intakes per month of children who are mostly pre-pubertal boys to 50 to 60 new patients per month, and 80% of them were teenage girls. Guess what teenage girls have in common? They are absolutely susceptible to social contagion. This occurred right when COVID lockdowns happened, right when we stuck one of these in all of those teenagers' phones, and right when we saw all of these girls watching videos. We actually referred to it in the clinic as TikTok ticks. They literally were parroting and coming into our clinic with the exact same storyline that they learned online about what it meant to be trans. And then third and finally was that I actually harmed patients. This protocol itself physically harmed my patients to the point where I was sending children to the emergency room for emergency surgeries after they had their first sexual experience and their vaginas were ripping open. We removed the breast of a young woman who called us back begging to have them put on. She not only had detransitioned and was re-identifying as a woman, she was also pregnant. She also grew up in foster care. And she literally told us that part of this identity for her was a social contagion. So I absolutely had to change my mind because ethically it is the only right thing to do. And I beg my party, please do the scientific right thing. Thank you.
That is probably, you know, I've listened to so many clips of hers, and every single time I hear a new clip, my head about explodes. If I heard her right, which we're about to bring her on in just a sec, they said that they took somebody's colon and turned it into a vagina, and then they got a massive infection. I'm pretty sure she said they died. What happened about the Hippocratic oath of doing no harm? Not to mention we're talking about children here. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome my guest, Jamie Reed. Ma'am, how are you doing today? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, of course, of course. So let's start off with a little bit of your background. How long were you on this side of medicine?
I worked in a pediatric gender center for almost 5 years.
So for almost 5 years. And at what point was it, what was it you saw that made you go, I need to start speaking out?
There were so many elements along the way, but I think the final catalyst was when basically I was told by the physicians that I worked with that I was no longer allowed to say that I had concerns about my patients, that I was no longer allowed to question any of the treatment protocols that we were putting these kids on. And I just felt like they had pushed me so far into a corner, the only thing I could do is blow the whistle.
Yeah. And I think probably one of the most disturbing things I've heard you say was that there is no standard of diagnosis. It's not equal across all 50 states. There's none. So when somebody comes in, I think your exact words were, if the patient says they're trans or if then they are. Is that true?
Yep. That's exactly how we phrased it. That's exactly how we were operating and with children. If the patient, the child, claimed that they were trans and that they wanted to medically transition, we would medically transition them. We would put them on this protocol.
And also part of that protocol is that they are supposed to go in front of a psychologist, correct, to determine whether or not they're transgender. Is that accurate?
In the United States, we took a model that used to be based on this kind of psychosocial therapeutic assessment process, and we turned it into, we fast-forwarded everything, we sped it all up. I had patients who saw a single mental health professional for 1 hour and came out the other side being put on puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, moved on to surgeries.
That's insane. You'd also stated, I think, one of your testimonies that I was listening to. Right, they're kids, which is absolutely insane. In one of your testimonies, I also heard you speaking that you basically force-fed the psychologist their statements that they were going to end up coming out with. Or the hospital did. So they would say, listen, this is the verbiage so that we can get it through insurance. And you guys are just going to fill this in. So they go, they see him for an hour. And then the psychologist blesses off on it, just fills in the blank. It's like a shell form. And then they're blessed off on and they start getting put on puberty blockers. What's the youngest you've seen them being put on puberty blockers?
So puberty blockers are supposed to be started at a certain stage of puberty, but that could be as young as 8, 9, 10.
How do the parents even, like, how does this even happen at 8 years old? I mean, an 8 year old, I'm thinking about my own kid. I have 3 kids. And I remember at 8 years old, I'm still trying to teach them about life. Like most kids, some 8 year olds believe in Santa, for crying out loud.
The youngest kid we saw was 3.
That's insane.
We were seeing children three, four, five, six. We would be affirming them socially, so agreeing with them, yes, you're trans, you know, changing names, pronouns, transitioning even in a school at that age, pre-K, kindergarten. The medical interventions, the earliest they would start would be at that Tanner stage two in puberty. But one of the other things I found really challenging is that the parents didn't always agree. And oftentimes it was the dads who would not agree with this. And it was the dads who were asking for more time, more therapy to slow down. And oftentimes there would be, you know, the mom was really gung-ho and really on the side of a quick medical transition.
So what happened in a case like that where you have a mom and a dad that are disagreeing, where a dad says, no, I don't want them to begin transitioning, but the mom that says they do? Does the hospital say, well, for the betterment of the patient, they need to go ahead and start transitioning, so dad, your word is just irrelevant?
It was worse than that. So there were parents that we basically told them to seek a divorce. The doctors that I worked with would go to custody cases and fight against the non-affirming parent. I remember one dad who, highly educated, came in with a whole binder full of research studies, and he just wanted to sit down and talk to the doctors about his concerns. And we treated him like he was a dangerous threat, and we refused to let him come up to the clinic room. We met him downstairs in this very bizarre kind of office setting where we had the hospital security sit with him in the room. We treated the parents. I've never seen anything like that in any other medical kind of care.
How? I mean, they're a parent, and I mean, like, the role of a parent is to make the best medical decisions for them. And that's, so the hospital is looking at it and saying, no, dad, you're a threat to this child because you don't agree with this medical assessment, which we don't have a surefire way. There's no standard of diagnosis. It's just because we say, therefore, your child will be receiving this treatment and you need to go over here. And by the way, you make it a pain in everybody's butt. We're going to send people to court, going through divorce,
yes,
court, custody cases, everything else, in order to shoot you down even further.
Yes. And these dads would lose custody. They would lose visitation. They would lose medical decision-making. Some of the things that I grapple with the most and have the hardest time with is I worked in a hospital where our mission statement was to be the protectors of childhood. And we were intentionally destroying families.
That Can you state the name of this hospital?
St. Louis Children's Hospital.
And where?
I live in St. Louis, Missouri. It was Washington University School of Medicine's St. Louis Children's Hospital Pediatric Transgender Center.
I just wanted to make sure that we get that out there and on the air, because people are going to ask if we don't state it out there, right? Like, I want these people known that this is what they are doing, and this is what they're doing to families. Out of the children, and this is what's
the
not
center
seen,
has
you know,
been
like,
closed.
In my opinion, it doesn't mean that there's still not people that are out there floating that are responsible.
Oh. That, yes,
Does that
that's
make sense?
Absolutely true. Yes, it totally makes sense. But I do know that after I blew the whistle, the attorney general here in Missouri launched an investigation, and we did eventually pass law to shut this center down. But that does not mean that there are not centers still in half of this country still operating in the same way.
Bingo. There's centers operating in this country that are still operating in the same way. And in addition to that, you have parents that are still affected by this. Those hormone blockers, right? Like the puberty blockers, they have long-term effects, do they not? Like, even if you're only taking them for a short period of time, don't they affect the child, especially during that age as they're developing?
They do. And one of the things that's really problematic is we don't actually know all of the long-term effects. So we know that there's an effect on bone health, bone density. We actually now suspect that there is probably some long-term effect on IQ and brain cognition and long-term brain development. We were running an experiment on a whole group of kids, and we didn't even know the long-term outcomes.
that is probably one of the saddest things you could think of, because as a parent, you know, I don't want my kids smoking cigarettes. My parent, you know, like if my kid, one of my kids comes to me and says, hey, I think I was born a paraplegic, I'm not going to go and break a couple of their legs or break their back. And yet we're doing that to our children. They can't smoke now until they're what, 21, I think, is like the new law across the United States of America. So how we're doing this is unreal. How many of those kids would come back, or how many of those parents would come back and they change their minds? I saw one of your videos where you had said you were testifying about, I believe it was an 18-year-old female that had already had a double mastectomy that ended up coming back and or had called you and was just crying over this. How many times would that happen?
It started to happen more and more, to the point where at one point we started a, you know, we started a whole spreadsheet of those who were detransitioning, or they were telling us, you should never have done this to me. There was a mom who reached out and said that she was demanding that we take the puberty blocker out of her child's arm. And we refused. We wouldn't even assist her. Her kid went from being on one mental health medication to, she said, a handful. She said, my child is a shell of their former self. This mom actually tried to go to general pediatrician's offices to just get this thing cut out of his arm, because it was an implant. We surgically had implanted it in his arm. It was after I blew the whistle that she finally was able to get the hospital to remove it. And her child no longer identifies as trans and is a happy, healthy young man. But we had completely started him on a pathway that would have fundamentally destroyed his health.
Okay, so then the next question would be, if a parent's coming to you saying, I want this removed out of my child's arm, get it out now, and the hospital's refusing to do it, I can think of two potential reasons for that. One being greed, and the other one being an ideology. In your opinion, which one do you think it is?
It's an ideology. It's a complete...
The ideology.
Yeah. I mean, made money for the hospital, but the reason why... the clinicians, why we couldn't stop and pause and go, hey, this is not the same group of kids we thought we were setting this up for, or there's kids who are being harmed. We would not stop at any point because it was a complete ideology.
So the hospital's closed down. Did anybody lose their medical license?
No. In fact, the primary endocrinologist that I worked with left the state of Missouri when the law was passed and moved to Colorado. He continued to medically transition kids in the state of Colorado. Just now, because at the federal level, they are starting to try to cut off funding to hospitals that continue to do this, it is believed that the hospital he moved to will stop medically transitioning kids. But no one has lost their medical license. I mean, we're still playing out one of the greatest medical scandals of our lifetime. We're right in the middle of it right now.
How many patients was the hospital seeing and doing this to? Like on average, how many patients were rotating through the clinic on a daily basis that are starting transitioning? Just out of curiosity, maybe we can get to like a scope of this.
Yeah. So in my tenure, there was about 1,500 patients and 80% of them were put on a medical pathway. And that was just in St. Louis region. This is not even one of the largest hospital settings. This is in Missouri. So if you imagine what's going on in the state of New York or the state of California or Washington or Oregon, the scale is unprecedented for how many kids have been harmed by this.
You said 80% end up getting put on a medical pathway. So is that normal in the medical field to have 80% of patients that come in that claim that they have a certain medical condition and that the doctors agree with them and start them on life-altering medication?
No. So the reason why it was 80% is that some of those kids were not just of the age yet to even start. So it wasn't that we were saying no to 20%. 20% were not yet of the age, or potentially they might have had a parent who was successful in a custody fight. Some of them, a small number, did not want medicine, like a medical pathway themselves. But for the most part, if you came to that center and said, I identify as trans and I want to be put on these interventions, you would leave with a prescription. And that is not how medicine works. If you imagine What if a whole group of kids decided that they had a malignant cancer that needed chemotherapy? And we just decided, if you said you needed it as a kid, we're going to put you on chemo. Like, that's basically what we were doing.
That is ridiculously insane. Let me ask you another question. Did you all get follow-ups from parents on mental health issues? You had mentioned it earlier that there was one parent that was complaining that, yeah, my kid's on all of these now, other medications due to mental health concerns. Did y'all get follow-ups on suicides and things of that nature that were taking place? I'm sorry if this is a disturbing conversation to have, but I think it's important to have for the American population.
So for the most part, there is a large myth that surrounds this idea that trans-identified individuals or kids have a high risk of completed suicide. They don't. They have a high rate of suicidal ideation. So they think about it, or they at least report that they think about it. But we actually did not see any high number at all of completed suicides. In fact, now that I'm on this side and I've looked at the data more, it's more concerning that people who are put on this medical pathway are the ones who end up often having higher rates of completed suicide. It's not those who are coming in. And also, there was very little evidence. There is very little evidence that this actually treats a mental health condition. There's no good evidence to support its use for depression or anxiety or suicidal ideation. The evidence simply doesn't back that up.
So there was no change that you would see in your patients if they had already came in with depression, if they'd already came in with suicidal ideation.
Sometimes they're getting worse. They were getting worse.
What would you say is the worst state right now that people need to pay attention to and look into? If they're parents and they're looking at with bringing people in here, what would be your warning to those parents? Like, what state and what would your warning be to anybody considering doing this right now?
State-wise, unfortunately, it's almost every blue state is still continuing on this pathway, full-throated. For parents, I would say the minute that if they have a child claim a trans identification, I would get them assistance or help that is not anywhere near a gender center.
So it's the gender centers that are the big issue over there. So taking them to a clinical psychologist, anything like that, because I mean, don't take them to a gender center because there's a high probability that they're going to end up getting put on some path of treatment. And no, it's okay. And it looks like we lost her. That was incredibly eye-opening. I'm not sure what, oh, there she is. She is here. Okay. Sorry. I thought I lost you.
Just the dog.
Oh, that'll happen when you have puppies. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for what you do. Seriously. Thank you. Because there's not that much. You were the first person I've really seen coming out and speaking out. Where can people find you at? Where can people find this information?
On X, I'm at Jamie Whistle, and I run an organization now fighting this in all 50 states. It's the LGB Courage Coalition, and you can find us on all social media platforms.
Yeah, and that's something else that we need to bring up. This is not an issue as far as whether you're straight, homosexual, or anything. It's literally harm and care for children. We need to take care of those kids. Thank you very much for coming on, and thank you for all of your time, and thank you for speaking out. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this new product is incredible. It's from our sponsor, Bigly, at thealexjonesstore.com. Optimal Human, you love the green powder super nutrient, the very best out there. Well, this is Optimal Human Nootropic called Mind Fuel. Introducing Mind Fuel, a super healthy, super strong energy nootropic adaptogen, which doesn't make you sick, doesn't have a letdown. It is incredible. That's just a few of the bottles. Look how many bottles are in there. And I only drink about half a bottle a day. It's so strong. Look at that right there, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what comes in each box of this. and it is simply amazing. Osmo Human Nootropic Mind Fuel is here. This clean, caffeine-free energy shot is designed for clear thinking, steady focus, and zero compromise. It's time to abandon sugary energy drinks and stimulant heavy formulas in favor of clean, functional, nootropic-based energy. Zero calories, sugar-free, no crash, no blood sugar spike, can be used daily without any guilt. Caffeine-free formula, smooth, clean energy, ideal for caffeine-sensitive users and late-day use. It's also got all these other incredible compounds like citicoline, alpha-GPC, GABA, supports mental clarity and focus. It appeals to both biohackers and holistic consumers. High-quality electrolytes and B vitamins, more than a brain shot, true functional fuel. Optimal Human Nootropic Mind Fuel, that's the name of the product, isn't just another energy product. It's a smarter alternative for consumers who demand clarity, control, and clean performance without compromise. Get 25% off for life when you become a subscriber, canceling time for free. Get Mind Fuel now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you've never tried the original superfood greens, Optimal Human, you really want to get this as well. It's the best green food I've ever had at thealexjonesstore.com. The widest selection of Patriot apparel, all sorts of cool collectible knives and more. And that's what funds us, and that's what does this. And I really appreciate your support because I can't do it without you. So I want to commend and thank the listeners. But just like I steered you right on gold and silver 2.5 years ago, I got out of the market before that. I said, now's the time. I was totally right. Just like I steer you right on politics, these products are incredible. Get our ultramethylene blue. It is the best in the market. Our Shilajit is the best. Our Irish Hemos is the best. Our turmeric is the strongest. Ultimate turmeric. TheAlexJonesStore.com. You are missing out. You don't get it. I want to thank those that have supported. I want to challenge those that haven't. What are you waiting for?
Just what I needed for my morning jog.
Working 12 to 13 hours a day, Mind Fuel keeps me on my toes and in the action.
Try this energy shot for a boost like no other. Power your mind and body today.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies? The delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact. Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health with Ultimate Turmeric Gummies. Inflammation doesn't stand a chance. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. Donald Trump says that our border is secure. Not sure where he gets that from, especially when you listen to our next guest. Just yesterday, Trump came out and he made this statement on the border, claiming that it was secure. Let's go ahead and play that clip for him of Trump just telling us how secure the border is.
The border is totally secure. You know, you forget, we had a border that I inherited where millions of people were coming through. Now we have a border where no one is coming through. They come into our country only legally. So you have to remember those things. You know, people forget as soon as you accomplish something, it goes into history and nobody ever wants to talk about it. We had a border that caused all of this problem. Biden caused, and the Democrats caused this problem. They allowed tens of millions of people to come in. Many of them were murderers. Many were drug dealers, drug addicts, people from mental institutions. They allowed these people to violate our country, to come into our country. And that's...
You know, I don't, I don't think anybody's going to debate what Donald Trump just said about the Democrats allowing people to come in and violate our country. But I think maybe it's more about the policies of the United States and the message that we're sending. Instead of having the CBP One app just welcoming people to apply for asylum, no, we turned it into the CBP Home app and told them that they could go home. Also, we have cases like this that I have here in my hand. Abdul Dahir Ibrahim. Abdul was one of those ones that was caught up in all of the fraud over in Minnesota that I think Donald Trump even said is now north of like $20 billion, the last figure I heard. This guy ended up entering into the United States in 89 at 14 years old. He went up to Canada, lied about his name, applied for asylum, and then he ended up getting denied. There he is up on your screen pictured with Ilhan Omar. Canada then deports him back to the United States of America, doesn't send him back to Somalia. No, he comes into the United States of America. In the USA, what do? Well, we release him back into the wild. Shortly thereafter, he decides he's going to head back to Canada, lies about his name, applies for asylum, and they end up throwing him in jail for 3 months. Now, you would think at that point Canada would do something with him, maybe send him back to Somalia, but no, instead they bring him back here into the United States of America in 1993. We get him back, and he's out running wild on the streets. Somehow he ends up becoming friends with Ilhan Omar, but that's not where his story ends. In 96, he attempted to re-enter Canada underneath another false name, but Canada denied him entry, so we held on to him. And then he decided he was going to go to California and apply for asylum in California in 98. I can't make this up, and his story's so ridiculous, I actually have to read it. It's not even something I can memorize. So he goes to California and applies for asylum. Now, mind you, he originally came to the United States in 1993, and now we're in 1998. He's been kicked out of Canada twice, thrown in jail in Canada, brought back to the United States, running around in the dang streets. He lies. He ends up claiming he has a wife and children. Turns out it's his sister. He ends up finally getting like an order of deportation, but not after, you know, applying to have it appealed and so on and so forth. And it just continues on forever. He's in 2001, after more than 10 years, USA finally issued an order of removal for him. It's wild, but he remained here and he continued to appeal. And there he was pictured with Ilhan Omar. Well, the border issue is one thing. Us changing our policies is another, sending the appropriate message. And now my next guest that I have coming up is going to be Corey Gutero. He runs the GOAT Initiative inside of Southern California, outside of San Diego. And he's been on the border for a very long time, collecting a heck of a lot of evidence. Corey sent me some stuff the other day, some pretty troubling videos, some pretty troubling pictures, some that I can't show you because from what we've been told, there's an current investigation on this subject. And that would be the Mexican army actually stepping foot on American soil here in the United States. And to talk more with me about it, ladies and gentlemen, I'm bringing up Corey Gutero. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
I said Gutero. It's actually Gutero, isn't it?
That's where the goat comes from.
Yeah, that's my mistake, man. I always forget. It's good to see you again, buddy. So how did this happen? What are you hearing? How is it that the Mexican army made it onto U.S. soil?
I feel like I'm living in this false reality at this point because we're still finding all this stuff. We're still all this stuff, meaning passports, birth certificates. Just over the last weekend, we found a new cell phone from China. It's Huawei or however you pronounce it. Plug that thing into the charger, fires right up.
Mm-hmm.
We have over 50 cell phones now. This stuff is just absolutely insane. We've got a ton of cameras out at the border, so we still see people crossing. We call it in to the different stations when we see people crossing. But I saw the clip that you played of the president telling everyone that the border's secure. I mean, I remember Mayorkas saying that. I remember Kamala saying that. I remember Biden saying that. At what point are we going to say that where it actually means something? Because it means nothing anymore.
Yeah, it quite literally means nothing. And I forgot to mention this in your introduction. It's not like you're a nobody either. You've spoken before. You've testified before Congress, have you not?
I have. I mean, I would say that I'm a nobody, but
how many people in America testify before Congress, man? I appreciate the humbleness, but for the love of God, you've testified before Congress. You've shown Tulsi Gabbard around the border along with several other people. It's wide open.
We did a very long tour before President Trump got elected of showing these people the problem. And I'm from San Diego. I grew up here. The only time I left was for college and when I was in the Army, and then I came right back. This is my home. East County, East San Diego is my home. I'm not going anywhere. I have a business here. My family's here. And I love it here. The border, being near the border is always interesting. And so there's always stuff going on. But I know these areas like the back of my hand. I grew up drinking beer out on all these backcountry roads out here. And I know some people think that's silly because we're in San Diego, but a lot of these places in rural San Diego County are some of the, it's 4,000 feet elevation. It's freezing cold at night. These people are starting fires. The illegals are starting fires, leaving them. They get up to move during the day, 60-mile-an-hour winds. That's why we have all these bad Santa Ana fires here. It'll snow in some of these places. So we have all kinds of different terrain. It is a harsh environment for the illegals, for the Border Patrol. There's tons of areas where the radio signal is just non-existent because in these canyons. So it's very hard to actually secure the border, especially when we have DHS in general. They're all over the country right now, just deporting anyone and everyone they can, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but everyone has forgotten about the actual border. People are still coming. And as you brought up, the Mexican army's coming through. It's insane.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and throw that picture up on the screen of the blurred out image that you ended up sharing over on social media so the folks at home can see this. And it's blurred out for a reason. Came from a security camera that's placed up over on the border. And it's kind of a bit of an issue when we start talking about how blurred the sucker is. And I'll be honest with you, unless you shared with me the videos and the photographs that you did, I wouldn't have believed it. But I didn't just look at the uniforms. I looked at the weapons and equipment that they're carrying. And I looked at the nature in which they're walking and what they're doing, how they're holding their weapons, all of that stuff. And this image is exceptionally blurred out that we have. But, you know, we've since known that now it appears that there's an open investigation that's going on into CBP. I believe you said it was a CBP supervisor that ended up authorizing this madness. And the craziest part is that it was on the same day that I can't remember his name off the top of my head. The guy from the FBI's top 10 most wanted ended up getting picked up at the U.S. Embassy down inside Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Wedding. It was interesting because it was the same day. So I'm like, wait, did this dude just try to walk through the border right here? Is that why they're sending these people across to come look for him? It was just, I have never seen them come that far to the north on purpose. So it wasn't an accident. You know, in some areas, there's a lot of places where there's miles in San Diego where there's no wall, no fence, nothing. And you could theoretically accidentally walk too far south, too far north. There's I've heard of stories in Arizona and Texas where Mexican military came too far north, or our guys went too far south and they got in a little bit of trouble, but never on like a specific mission looking for someone. So for 4 years, the last 4 years, or during the Biden administration, when all of this stuff started taking place, basically in my backyard, we started looking into all this crap, basically. And we were, while DHS was not doing their job for 4 years, I'm like, well, someone has to pick this stuff up. Someone has to go talk to the neighbors, figure out what the hell is going on. So DHS has lost the power of working with the locals on the north side of the border, our side of the border. But TGI has moved into that role. So we not only have sources within DHS and local, state, federal agencies, but all the locals along the border. A lot of times, it's kind of frustrating to me, they will call me before they will call Border Patrol, and then I will call Border Patrol. But this story that you're talking about right now, the Mexican military, I've heard this from two different sources who don't know each other, and we have the pictures to prove it. We can't show the pictures because it is under investigation right now, which obviously has nothing to do with me, but I still try to maintain our sources are incredibly valuable because of the information that we get, that sometimes we're able to put the bad guys away. This is important because we cannot have another foreign military, if that's what it was. I mean, we don't know if it was a cartel. We know CJNG have been caught with Mexican military uniforms. So realistically, we don't know who the hell it was.
Well, I mean, you said something interesting as well, which is you said that they were searching for somebody. Is that what you heard? They're searching for somebody. So they're searching for somebody on U.S. soil. There was no U.S. federal officer presence, correct? There was nobody from DHS that was alongside of them. Not that in the video I saw, not in the photographs, none. No federal officers. Correct. And these men are armed. And so that leads me to my next point. If they were actually looking for somebody armed on U.S. soil, and to tell the people at home, because we can't show it, it appeared most certainly that they were on private property and shaking door handles. That is absolutely insane, because a U.S. citizen seeing that could shoot that person, and then we have another issue. Or we could have, I don't know, them shoot a U.S. citizen and have a completely different issue on our hand. But probably the biggest tell to me that this was not properly coordinated is, never in my wildest dreams would I ever even imagine a scenario where it would be legal for the United States to approve of all militaries, the Mexican military, to come over on the U.S. side of the border. And like you said, it was the same day that Wedding ended up turning himself in down south in Mexico. And so then the question is, well, why would Wedding turn himself in? And I look at that and I say, if Wedding turned himself in, he's probably rolling over on some people. His life was probably in danger, and he's probably going to use the information that he has to maybe harm some of his adversaries. And I'm not so sure, even though the uniforms and the weapons matched up, that it was even the Mexican military, that it was the cartel that was dressed up as the Mexican military, and that you might have a dirty, dirty CBP agent in there.
Yeah. And, well, you made a good point as to, even if it was approved, well, would that ever get approved? Another military coming across the border on U.S. soil to look for somebody?
We would be leading that operation. It's U.S. soil. You're still going to have a warrant. You're just going to have all sorts of stuff in order to make that happen when you're on private property, especially when you saw them, man, just yanking on door handles. This is the United States of America, and it's certainly not going to be led by the Mexican army. It's going to be led by United States forces of some kind, definitely not the military. A law enforcement agency is going to be leading that, depending on what jurisdiction it's going to fall into. And so for the Mexican army to be coming across, it's a problem. And people were given stand down orders, told not to intervene with them, to let them basically do their thing, correct?
Correct. And then the other issue is, so while my team was not out there at the time, what if we were? And the things you brought up there, what in the hell am I supposed to do with my team if we come around the corner and the Mexican military is right there with their rifles?
I mean, you get shot or shoot back, because I don't think it was the Mexican military, even though they were armed and certainly looks like it and the uniforms matched. That doesn't seem like a coordinated government activity to me. That seems like somebody put in a phone call to a friend and then somebody gave an illegal order. That's what it seems like to me, to ignore them on U.S. soil, because you're putting civilian lives at risk the moment you do that. That's insanity. Have you heard back from CBP, DHS, anybody for actual statements on this, to actually owning up to it, admitting to it?
It's been deathly quiet. And I would like them to understand is that I'm not a police auditor, right? I would say that I'm on the same side 99.9% of the time with what they're doing. But if someone's doing something egregiously wrong, like letting a foreign military come into our country, someone's got to speak up. And we know from 4 years of no one speaking up, that's not true. There was a Border Patrol commander, but I forgot his rank, who testified in Congress right after he retired. That's not what I mean by speaking up. I mean, speaking up when the problem is occurring. If they're not going to do it, then I will just continue to do it. And I'm not trying to piss anybody off over there, because we have a very good relationship with them, with guns and uniforms, period.
And shake our door handles. And to me, that whoever that is, like, you know, you had stated that it's, I'm not here to, you know, like be a law enforcement officer, anything. No, you've actually worked hand in hand and done some very good work in helping to keep the United States border secure. Taking your personal time, you've got a nonprofit set up, correct, in order to make this happen.
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. And you are devoting your life. I know how much work you put into this. And there is a good respect for you amongst DHS agents over there. And so for them to come back or for even anybody to try to make the statement that says that you are trying to go against law enforcement in this case, or you're trying to be some sort of auditor in this case, is absurd. That person that did that, that person that told anybody under their purview not to engage, to ignore it, to leave it alone, that's not somebody that's on our side. Because I'm fairly confident that's not a legal order to give. Fairly confident. I was never a federal law enforcement officer, but I do know how the Constitution of the United States works. And I'm pretty sure we shouldn't have foreign militaries entering our country armed, shaking U.S. door handles.
And we spoke about this a couple of days ago, where I asked you in your capacity or in some kind of federal capacity that you've ever been in. When you go to another country, when you go down to Mexico for work, actual work, looking at a crime scene or whatever it is, we talked about, are you allowed to have a gun versus are you not? And then, I don't know, that was interesting to me how you explained it to me.
Yeah, it depends. Depending on the country that you end up going into, you end up getting permits for these things, right? So if a federal law enforcement officer or anybody like that is going to be flying into another country, I know certainly when I've gone into other countries in a military capacity, depending on the country I was going in, the role I'm going in, we would have to get our passport stamped and we would have to get specific permits from that country in order to carry firearms inside of that country, whether or not they were concealed or open carried. So it just depends. And I would assume for law enforcement officers, unless there's some joint agreement or something, mutual aid agreement that goes into place there, that it's going to be the exact same thing. But at no time would I see us ever allowing, especially unsupervised. And by the way, in these cases, you're not taking the lead in that country, right? Like if we're going over into Mexico for something like that, first of all, U.S. is not allowed to go inside of Mexico and just start arresting people. It's not allowed. That's why this guy had to turn himself into the embassy. Second, if something like that was to take place, 99.9% of the time, that host nation is going to be the one taking the lead. This situation is egregious enough, and I would hate to waste these last few minutes that I have with you and not talk about the other issues that are taking place in this country with everything that's going on, because what you have seen on the border, I don't think most people... This is just one tiny situation, a chunk of the United States border that we're talking about with armed men dressed in Mexican military uniforms coming over. But there's a bunch of people in this country right now that are all for just wide open borders. And what they don't understand is that the cartel controls pretty much all of the movement across the border. Do me a favor, Corey, explain how many of these people end up falling in human trafficking, the type of evidence that you've seen. Explain to them what the rape trees are down on the border, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I actually talked about this when I testified in Congress, all of these different issues. But 8 out of 10 migrant or illegal alien women who come across the border are sexually assaulted. I don't hear the left screaming about that. I don't see the left starting signal chats at the border trying to help these women and children. What I do see is the left putting out their water bottles and food still today, NGOs. And my mom always has to remind me, you got to tell people what an NGO is, because I have to look it up every time. So NGO is a non-government organization where they fill in sometimes where the government is falling short, but falling short depending upon your definition of falling short. For these NGOs, falling short means we're not helping the illegals enough. Now, I was a respiratory therapist. I was in healthcare. I don't want to see anybody die. But at the same time, if you keep feeding the birds, they keep coming. So I don't know why we let these NGOs back in these areas that are nobody's supposed to be in at this point. And one of these, this stuff, the Mexican military thing, is just a drop in the bucket. Weird stuff happens every week at the border. The rape trees that we have pictures of, they're more bushes in San Diego, not really trees, but it's these cartel members use them as trophies. So they will take the women's underwear and bras and they throw them on these, like, you know, you'll be walking down, you just see a bush full of bras and underwear, and it's like a conquest for them. It's disgusting. And again, I don't see the left anywhere out there helping these people. I see us. If we see women and children, I'm not picking them up in a vehicle, or I will call it in. I will make sure they're okay. We'll give them some water. I'm not leaving water out there for them, but I don't, again, I don't want anybody to die. I don't want most people to die. And then the cell phones, we're still finding passports, Pakistani passport, two Pakistani passports just 2 weeks ago. And I mean, everybody on my team has kids.
You're talking passports and things like that, but also maybe explain to them the major national security threat. A lot of people don't know how many foreign terror organizations actually reside inside Pakistan, but there's a really good example that I think you have, which was the cell phones that you guys broke into that had specifically or unlocked that specifically in some of these messages talked about Chinese nationals recruiting spies in the United States of America in order to spy on naval stations, correct?
Correct. And so one of the first cell phones we got into, it just seems like a joke, but it's not. The password was 123456. It opened right up. And that led to that is where we dove in, because we're now in about 200 different Telegram chats from that one cell phone, addresses, phone numbers, pictures. In one of the chats alone, there's about 30,000 pictures, about 5,000 videos. And there's a bunch of hundreds of files that they put in there. And that's one out of about 200. And that's the Chinese one. There's Azerbaijan, Pakistan, Ukraine, Russia, all these different chats telling these people where to come in. And one of the, you know, I don't speak Mandarin, but I was reading through this chat one day. I finally figured out how to translate it, but translated it almost in real time. But one of them, the main chats was talking about everything that you just brought up, taking pictures of the naval base, Coronado and Point Magoo, taking pictures of the gates and fences around the different Starlink bases, or what's it called? You know, Tesla, all kinds of different critical infrastructure that these different Chinese people are using as a repository of information. I've just now started to build a map with all these different points on there, and it's critical infrastructure pictures of them from all over the country. And most people would say, hey, they just got here. They're taking pictures of the Golden Gate Bridge, Coronado Bridge, right? Yeah. That's exciting. Well, not when you have 30,000 people taking pictures of different critical infrastructure across the entire country.
Yeah.
It doesn't sense, but
I want to thank you for coming onto the show and sharing this information. You are a reputable human being, whether or not you realize it or not, you are, right? Not everybody gets to testify before Congress. Where can people find you, sir? And how can they donate and help you out for what you are doing to help secure the U.S. border?
Thank you. It's the goatinitiative.org. I'm the Corey Goat on X, and it's Goat Initiative on X. We could use all the help we could get at this point. We have taken the place for DHS's failure over the previous 4 years. So anything you donate goes straight to the team.
Corey, thank you very much for everything. I really appreciate having you on.
I'm jacked up on the meth lane. Blue is the best thing you guys have ever had.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it, I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something, what a blessing.
I do subscribe to the methylene blue. I feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the methylene blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took
10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now.
I must say that it does a damn good job.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the Methylene Blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at TheOliveShowStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.